Now, remember, going back to this COVID emergency, all the health workers, Irish, when trying to come home from working in Australia and other places to take part in the fight against the coronavirus and the illness COVID-19. Many frontline workers made huge sacrifices about that. They went into various situations, not the correct or inadequate PPE, but they went in to do what they felt was their duty and did it on behalf of us. Lots made all sorts of sacrifices, and many people in Wicklow have made similar sacrifices too, including my next guest. Kilcool nurse Maria Messid became part of a special COVID-19 unit in Talla Hospital, and guess what? She made the hard decision not to stay at home, but there was somebody at home, her son Ezra. Good morning to you, Maria.
Good morning, Declan. How are you?
Okay. And could I say, first of all, thank you for that. That was an incredible, in a way, self-sacrifice for the good of the nation. So, thanks for that. That was fantastic.
You're very welcome. It wasn't a decision. It was just something that we did, you know?
Yeah. What was your thoughts at the time?
I was fearful like everybody else. I was super scared to go into work without the right protective equipment. It's a disease we still don't know a lot about or enough about to control it. So I was super, we were terrified, but Talla did a great job. We were provided with any amount of PPE. They did a great job securing what we needed. So we went in and we just made a plan together and went ahead. It was terrifying though. I was terrified.
Yeah, I can imagine. And then you've got somebody at home and taking on this virus and not wanting to bring it home and not wanting to get further out in the community. You know, you had to make that huge sacrifice of leaving your son Ezra.
It was about the disease and the possibility of him catching it or me bringing it home, but it was about childcare as well. I didn't have anywhere to leave him safely and commit to 12, 16-hour days. An unscheduled schedule, if you know what I mean. We didn't know what shifts we were doing week on week. So it was very hard to organise. I mean, my sister was amazing. She took him under her wing and he was happy. So for the first few weeks, it wasn't an issue. I knew Ezra thought he was on holiday somewhere. He was very excited on his adventure, you know.
Yeah.
But after that, it became a problem, yeah.
Indeed, because you were doing the best you could in your job and all that, but at the same time, you know, I'd say the desire to hug your son, to maybe read a bedtime story or be there if
we
there was some issue.
We were great. Like at 7 o'clock in the evening, I'd Claire, my sister's children, and my son would sit around their tablet, and I'd read them a story whenever I wasn't at work. Which was really, really helpful. Like social media aspect was so helpful. But after about week four, it became a physical. I just knew he needed me and I needed him to be happy, you know?
Yeah, but it went on for longer.
Yeah, it was nearly 9 weeks when it was a very hard decision to make to leave my team in Talla. I mean, they're brilliant. Talla Hospital strategy has been, it's huge. I don't think you could expect a business or an industry that big to change every single part of its, you know, functioning processes so quickly and so effectively. They did a great job. And, you know, it's ongoing in there. So I feel like I want to go back into my team. And as soon as I can, I will. But it was a big decision leaving them and coming back to Ezra. I had to keep weighing it up. But eventually, yeah, it came up to about 9 weeks. And I just, that's it. I have to see him. I can't actually survive without him anymore. Just, you know, he's the centre of my life. He's what gives me joy and keeps me going forward.
And so, yeah. What was that reunion like then?
I tried for it not to be too dramatic, but yeah, it was awesome. It was wonderful just to get him and hold him and bring him back. He was delighted to be back into his house. He kept saying to me silly things like, "Mom, do you remember this fork? This is my favourite fork." You know, and for him, it was as simple as that. He was very happy and he was thriving, but when he got home, he was genuinely content and settled. And we've had an awesome week and a half now, and we're just genuinely quite happy, the two of us, you know.
Yeah. How long did the first hug go on for?
Well, I kept him, and still, even now, we're physically very, want
oh,
to be
really?
Beside
you
each other
have to
all
do
the
that,
time.
Do you?
Yeah. All the time we're hugging. But that's us anyway. But yeah.
Yes.
So the first day, I think we just kept, everywhere I was, he was following me, or everywhere he was, I was following him. It was lovely.
Gosh. Yeah, brilliant. And others around you as well, they, you know, that were working in Tala, did they make similar sacrifices in different ways about things?
Yeah, I mean, I know a guy who hasn't seen his pregnant wife. I think there's a good few people who stayed away from their pregnant partners. I know colleagues in my own unit whose kids, they just cocooned with their husbands and they slept in a single room and did not interact. And to this day, like, they're still in those COVID units. They're still doing that. So my story is 9 weeks. Theirs is coming into 11, 12, isn't it?
Yes,
And they're still doing that. And that's the one thing that is still very upsetting, you know. I feel like I've left them behind. I want to go back to them and help them out. But actually, you know, you just have to do what you can. But they're all still working.
Yes. And the fight is going on. Is there any alleviation of this at all?
Oh, yeah. That's why I left, because the first wave felt like we had got a grip on things. And it looked like our population of critical care patients, anyway, was on the downward trend, and, you know, kind of reliably so. So I felt, okay, this is a good time to break and go and see him. If a second wave comes, you know, I'll have to go back. I will go back. But at the moment, there's two or three wards in Tala that have COVID patients in them still. There's a high dependency unit, purpose built for COVID patients, and there's still a number in the intensive care unit.
Yeah, we learned a lot, didn't we? I mean, in Ireland over the last few weeks. Do you think, you know, as your own personal view, do you think it's getting better?
Yes, it is. It's just that fear of the second wave, you know, and my worry for my colleagues and friends and all the staff still working with COVID.
And when you think, all those people that you mentioned about people not being able to see, you know, the person that is going to give birth to a baby and things like that, you know, and yourself with your kid. I mean, what's your view when you see people out and about?
I'm trying to be understanding, because I feel it too. I'm quite a free spirit, so I love to be out and about and out in the fresh air. I find it very hard to stay inside. But to tell you, there's a lot of groups of kids back out hanging around, which is lovely for them. You can see they're absolutely happy out, running around, having the crack like summer holidays. But really, they need to be a bit more mindful of people trying to walk through those groups of kids that are vulnerable, and cocooning people just trying to just gently come back out and do a few walks. It's just, you know, we all just need to respect each other and hold on a bit.
What's it like to see someone who is, you know, suffering with COVID-19?
So the critical illness is extraordinary. I haven't seen a critical illness like that before. I know all the healthcare workers keep saying that, but genuinely, the critical illness is so long. It's not just that they're critically ill and they're the sickest patients that we've seen. It just goes on for week on week on week. They're not getting better, yet they're not getting worse, so we keep fighting. And maybe 3 weeks later, they start, you know, recovering a bit. And I think people's experience who've had bad cases and stayed at home has been about 3 or 4 weeks of an extraordinarily debilitating flu-like illness. But the critical illness is pretty ugly. It's a hematological disease as well as a respiratory disease. So, you know, they're very hard to mind. They're very hard. And we've made beds out of nothing. And we've got staff who haven't looked after them before. This is at the peak now, looking after them. So it was scary. But we did well, I think. I think we did well.
And, you know, you're doing your job, but you're human at the same time.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I've done ICU for years and years. But the people who were redeployed into ICU from other areas, you could see they were just dealing with the exposure to that kind of illness for the first time. And that's really, really hard. That's another issue. That's another thing they have to deal with as well as doing their job.
Yeah. What's it like being a nurse? You know, where does that calling come from that you're prepared to make that extra sacrifice of things and in a way, put yourself second?
I don't know. I've asked myself that question my whole life.
Yeah.
I think my nanny, my mom, my auntie Beth, my nanny Massa, they were all women that kind of, they didn't groom me to do it. They kind of gave me the opportunity to do it and set me up. Probably because they always wanted to do it. I know my Auntie Beth always wanted to do it. So sometimes I think it comes from them that I ended up here. But I don't mind that I ended up here. It just feels like that's what I'm supposed to do. It doesn't. It's not a big sacrifice. It was in my 20s when I wanted to be out partying all the time. Well, we did a fair amount of that as well.
But, of course you had to, absolutely.
You know, you don't think about it. It's a great job. It's a fantastic job.
In a way, this is like a war as such. You're home on leave, aren't you?
I know, from the front. And I'm just itching to go back, but also really enjoying my time with Ezra and my family. So what do you do? If we have a second wave, I'll go back. But I'm really hoping, fingers crossed, that we don't, because we've done a great job.
Yeah, and is the second wave, is the fear that with the, say, the normal winter flu virus or something that'll exasperate it? And
there's all that to think about. When does it hit? And this COVID doesn't seem to be seasonal or affected by weather kind of season, does it? It's kind of rampant everywhere. So, vaccine, please God, is how we'll really get out of it, I think, isn't it? I don't know. I think I've saturated. I read and read and read and read. And then the last few weeks, I haven't been reading too much about COVID. I've just been trying to cope day by day. Do you know?
Yeah.
Because I think we get oversaturated with the whole topic as well.
Well, we'd be lost if it wasn't for people like yourself, Marie. And I know that none of you or your colleagues, you really don't want to hear that sort of thing. But God,
I know we're very uncomfortable hearing it. But thank you, Declan. But it gives you kind of because as nurses, we're told not to think too much of yourself. But we're not doing it for thanks. We don't do it to judge people. It's just ingrained in us that it's our profession, and the same with doctors. And our healthcare assistance has blown us out of the water. You know, it has been amazing, and it has been a war, But it's pretty amazing. Put me in touch, really, with a lot more people than I have ever been with.
And you would like us to think about you and your staff, of course, and obviously the patients as well, when we think about maybe breaking the guidelines or going off on ourselves.
Yeah, just hold firm. I think that's the message. Keep the 2 meter distance, keep the masks on. I mean, even if you want to let your kids out, it's just really, they should be wearing a mask if they're out and about in a group. And they should be, you know, if an adult comes up and says, move on, lads, you know, just move on. That's my big message. I think that's going to be a big problem because I'd love to see the vulnerable people getting out and about now. But yeah, hold on, do whatever the government tells us to do because they've done a great job. Like, look at our figures. So I'm happy to keep following their advice.
Tell us about your son. What age is he?
Ezra's 5 and nearly 6, he'll tell you. And just finished junior infants. And he's brilliant. He's a great lad. You know, he's a real country lad. He loves being out and about and up the fields and on his little mini adventures. But he's a great boy and he's done really well. He was very, very brave. You know, and he trusted who was around him and just was asked. Which is not his go-to.
I know. I mean, how does he think about it? I mean, he's, you know, no school and, you know, probably not seeing as many of his friends as he did. And
I think kids don't care as long as they can see their mum and dad and their best friends. They can talk to them. And I mean, I think a kid's dream is to be at home with just their mum and dad.
Yes, yeah.
And he's not unhappy. He's happy every day. He wakes up happy. He goes to bed usually grumpy. So that's just the way Ezra is.
Marie, fantastic to talk to you and hear you. And we'll keep in mind this conversation when we think about things that could maybe jeopardize the great fight that's there and maybe, you know, keep away that second wave. So you're very good to share that. I'm delighted,
that
the hugs were great and all that sort of thing. So well done.
Good
and thanks again.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Bye.
See you, Maria. Bye-bye. That's Maria Messett there. Maria is a nurse in Tallaght Hospital. She's from Kilcool. It's 087 77 11 103.